Jambo.
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any kind of information that you can get from any kind of screen is worth your time. We waste our time and our energy and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a Black activist advocacy and think tank with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for Black people in America through education, economics, and a culture shift. Check them out at www.pactsinc.org, PAXinc.org, and leave a donation, become a member, volunteer, whatever floats your boat or finds your lost remote. Today, on Lessons from the Screen, we will be taking a look at the CBO long-term budget outlook. What does it say? What does it mean? Who does it? Why should we care? What should we do? And many more questions. We're going to try to touch on most of these. You know, we like to keep these things short, but we're going to try to touch on most of these and a few more in our allotted time. Amidst everything else going on today and this past week, you know, there was a shooting in Annapolis. We know he's white because he's alive. After the cops apprehended him, the Supreme Court justice, all of this stuff going on, is real easy to overlook reports like this. But this report is pretty significant. It says a lot, and we should definitely analyze what it means. After you finish listening to this show, you should definitely head to the website. Let us know what you think. The report will be up on the website. Read it. Tell us what you think. Should we care? Is it significant? What do you think we should do? Should we do anything at all? In this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will be talking about the CBO 2018 Long-Term Budget Outlook Report. The Congressional Budget Office was created by the Congressional Budget and Empowerment Control Act of 1974 and was intended to be a nonpartisan agency that produces independent analysis of budgetary and economic issues to support the congressional budget process. So they basically, they're intended to look at the numbers, analyze the data, and give Congress something that they can chew on and understand to make their decisions with. Now, according to their mission statement, not the paraphrasing I did, that's according to me, but all of that fancy stuff I used before with all that jargon, that's according to them. So every year, the agency releases reports and predictions on the economy and the debt while also providing cost estimates for proposed legislation. Now, they do not issue policy recommendations, and by most accounts, there's a general consensus among most economics and people who fancy themselves savvy on this sort of thing, that the agency is credible and truly neutral, which is impressive in today's day and age of hyper political governments. So the agency was created during a fight with President Nixon and the Democratic Congress of the time. Congress wanted to maintain its control over the nation's economic purse strings, which is something that is protected by the Constitution, from executive overreach, which is something that the Constitution frowns upon, but happens every time we get a new executive. And basically, the CBO was created to give Congress a better economic understanding of policy and budgets, as well as lessening their reliance on the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, which falls under the executive branch and answers directly to the president. So you'll oftentimes see the OMB, especially nowadays under the Trump administration with Mick Mulvaney leading it, they'll be kind of trying to get people to disregard the CBO reports and lean more towards their reports. But the OMB answers directly to the White House Chief of Staff. They answer directly to the president. And so their reports and the things that they look at are largely going to be favorable to what the president is trying to do. So the Congress of the time in the 1970s wanted to have their own independent budgetary analysis office so that they wouldn't have to listen to the analysis of the OMB, which was beholden to President Nixon. Lo and behold, poof, as two people come together and have sex and make a baby, these two, Congress, came together and they created the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. Now, since the time of its creation, it has become the most credible source of information on the economy and the government, derailing the OMB. Now everybody looks to the CBO report, and most people don't even know that the OMB still exists. So we're not going to dig into the entirety of the report line by line like we did with the BIE report. I felt like the BIE report, and I mention it a lot because it's that significant, but I felt like that was extremely important and it was fairly short. This is roughly a 50-page document, but it's still easy to consume. So you should definitely go to the Freedom Train website, www.freedomtrainradio.com, and go into the Lessons for the Screen area, Lessons from the Screen area, and check this report out. What we are going to do is go over the bullet points that they've selected as important bullet points from the report. So we're going to read through those, and there are five of them. And then, you know, we're going to break them down a little bit. So the very first point, it says in the CBO's projections, the federal budget deficit relative to the size of the economy grows substantially over the next several years, stabilizes for a few years, and then grows again over the rest of the 30-year period, leading to federal debt held by the public that would approach 100% of gross domestic product, GDP, by the end of the next decade and 152% by 2048. Moreover, if lawmakers change current laws to maintain current policies now in place, preventing a significant increase in individual income taxes in 2026, for example, the result would be even larger increases in debt. Now, that last portion where it's talking about changing current laws to maintain certain policies now in place, that's referring to the tax Trump tax plan that was passed. And for those of you, I'm sure all of us know that it lowered the tax rate for individuals, but that was not a permanent lowering. That was, in fact, a temporary lowering. After 10 years, that goes away and tax rates for individuals return to their pre-tax reform levels. Meanwhile, the tax breaks for businesses are permanent. So it's basically saying if we change laws to make those tax cuts permanent for individuals, then it would result in even larger increases in debt. And the reason for that is because it lowers the income of the U.S. government while doing nothing to curb spending. So spending is going up. And the government, a big portion of the government's income comes from taxes. So if we're paying less taxes, the government has less income to facilitate services and various other things that it tries to facilitate. So this is important. Two other points. For those of you that don't know what GDP means, GDP is gross domestic product, and it is the monetary total value of all products and services made or produced in the United States. So it's basically a summation of everything that our country produces. And you boil that down to its monetary value, and that is what the GDP is. So when they're talking about our federal debt approaching 100% of our gross domestic product, our GDP, what they're talking about is our federal debt being more than the amount of money we make in a year. So to put that into perspective, say you buy a house for $100,000, right? I know that's kind of inexpensive for a house, but just for the sake of discussion, if you have a job that only pays you $20,000 a year, $30,000 a year, then your debt is now higher than your income. Your debt is higher than your GDP. So that is essentially what we're talking about. Your debt being more, you having more debt than the value of what you produce. So it's not necessarily that it's always going to be a bad thing, and debt is a whole nother discussion. But in the case of a nation, you never want to get to the point where your national debt is outstripping what you produce as a country by large margins. And this would be the first time that we've gone over 100% since World War II. We're approaching those levels. If this report stays stable and things follow along these projections, then we will break our historic high by the year 2048, I believe it is. So again, those are important things to keep in mind, and those are important things to consider as we begin talking about economics. So the next point says the federal government's net interest costs are projected to climb sharply as interest rates rise from their currently low levels and as debt accumulates. Such spending would about equal spending for Social Security, currently the largest federal program, by the end of the projection period. Now, the reason why we talk about the reason why this is significant, shall I say, is because if you hear, especially conservatives, well, old school conservatives, not trumpets, but if you hear the old school conservatives, they were constantly talking about how Social Security was out of control, how spending on Social Security was just ridiculous. And that's because Social Security makes up a very large portion of our spending in the United States, of our government federal spending. So by comparing the net interest cost on federal debt to the Social Security cost, we begin to put things in the scope about how serious of an issue this becomes. If they were railing against Social Security, and this was politicians from both sides, actually, of late have begun railing against the increasing cost for Social Security, then that same energy, they need to bring that same energy when they start talking about the debt and the cost on the debt. Now, the debt is interesting in and of itself because a lot of us are under this misconception that China and foreign countries own most of our debt. And that simply isn't true. Most of the United States debt is actually owned by United States citizens. So when we begin talking about this, and I'm going to veer a little bit off topic, but when we begin talking about the public portion of the national debt, over 55% of that debt is owned by U.S. individuals and institutions. How do you buy a piece of government debt? You're talking about bonds, government bonds. Government bonds can be bought from the government treasury department website. Basically, they're used in investments to counterbalance the volatility of stocks. So when the stock market is being very volatile and it's moving all crazy and you're unsure, you typically move your money into bonds because bonds are more stable. And when you buy a bond, you're buying a portion of government debt. Now, when the stock market stabilizes and things are going good or it's increasing rapidly, you move your money out of bonds and into the stock market for the increased yield or the increased production, the increased value that you get from your dollars. So bonds serve as a safety net for a lot of people in investment. And when they start talking about increasing your diversifying your portfolio, they're not just talking about diversifying the amount of stocks in the sectors that your stocks are in when you're purchasing stocks, but they're also talking about investing in government bonds and government securities. And when you buy government securities, as I've said for the third or fourth time now, you're buying government debt. So 55%, 56% of government debt is owned by American citizens. So that's something to be remembered. Now, when we go into the next portion of who owns the national debt, you begin to look at foreign nations. Now, China and Hong Kong only own about 10% of our national debt. Okay? They only own about 10%. Japan owns about 8%. and all the other foreign nations own about 25%. So the large majority of the debt is held by the American people in the forms of government bonds and government securities. So when they, and this is when they start talking about the interest rate on that debt, the interest rate on that debt is the interest rate that is set by the federal exchange. So the rate that they set in terms of lending money and borrowing money, the interest rate that they're setting, is the interest rate that a lot of government bonds are going to be paying out to the people that own them. So just to sum it all up, I know it's a tad off subject. When the government needs money, it creates bonds, government security, government securities. It then offers those government securities through its marketplaces on the government websites. Individual taxpayers, as well as foreign nations, can then buy those securities, and they're in essence buying government debt, federal debt. And then they receive interest rate on that debt for as long as they have it, or until the bond fully matures, at which point they get paid out whatever they're due. So that's kind of how this whole debt thing works. So they're talking about the interest rate rising. That's because as the economy stabilizes, as things get better and the government cools down, and the Federal Reserve is largely trying to slow growth to a more stable level so we don't crash and burn and go through another recession, they will increase interest rates to restrict the flow of money. Now, I'm not going to get into all of that, but basically put, the Fed is going to raise interest rates, which is going to make money more expensive, which is going to increase the amount of debt that the government has, because it's going to increase the amount of money they have to pay out to people that own that debt. So that's what this portion is talking about. So to sum all that up, it's basically saying that the interest rates on the national debt are expected to climb sharply from their currently low levels, and they're low because we were still trying to recover from the Great Recession. So as the debt accumulates, spending, which is not in check and continues to be rampant, is going to surpass federal Social Security, or the interest rate on the debt, and the spending that's going to accumulate more debt is going to surpass this funding currently in place for the Social Security program, which is a major red flag. So the next point, non-interest spending is projected to rise from 19% of the GDP in 2018 to 23% in 2048, mainly because of increases in spending for Social Security and the major healthcare programs, primarily Medicare. Much of the spending growth for Social Security and Medicare results from the aging of the population. Growth in spending for Medicare and other major healthcare programs is also driven by rising healthcare costs per person. Now, basically what this is saying is that not only is the debt going to increase, not only is the interest rate on the debt going to increase, and not only are we going to run into a problem when the tax cuts, if Congress does what they have hinted at doing and make the individual tax cuts permanent, but also Social Security is going to become more expensive as people, the population gets older. And the population is, in fact, getting older. The baby boomers are still around, and while they are dying off, they are living longer than generations prior to them, and all of their children are getting older. All of their children are now middle-aged to upper middle-aged to lower old people. So we're running into that situation as well, where the healthcare cost for an aging population, as people live longer, they acquire or accrue more health concerns, more health issues, and require more healthcare to keep them alive. But in addition to that, our nation is in general unhealthy. So not only are we getting older, but even the young people are getting unhealthy. Even the kids nowadays are having health issues that were in generations past considered old people problems or elderly people problems, high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, all of these other issues and illnesses that we just haven't seen in kids before. So as a whole, we're unhealthy, and that is going to add to the spending, the necessary spending that the government is going to have to partake, and is going to have to partake in all of that with potentially less incoming revenue. Now, the next point says revenues, in contrast, are projected to be roughly flat over the next few years relative to GDP, rise slowly and then jump in 2026. Thereafter, revenues would continue to rise relative to the size of the economy, although they would not keep pace with growth in spending. The projected growth in revenues is largely attributable to increases in individual income tax receipts. Now, this is basically what I've been saying basically the entire show thus far, is that in 2026, the tax mandate will expire, and that will increase revenues, provided, again, that Congress does not do things they've hinted at various times, such as make the new tax rate permanent. But if they don't, then there will be a jump in 2026 in government revenues when the tax rate returns to its higher levels and we pay more in individual taxes. But it's also saying that even with that jump, it would not increase at a rate that is sufficient to keep revenues in line with spending. Bottom line, gotta stop spending so much damn money, and we gotta figure out a way to curb the debt, to start paying back on the debt. Otherwise, the interest on the debt, the growing debt, is going to be catastrophic. And that's something you have to realize. If you only have a dollar and you have a 25% interest rate, you only have to pay a quarter in interest. If you have $100 and you have a 25% interest rate, you have to pay $25 in interest. And if you have $1 million and you have 25% interest rate, you have to pay $250,000 in interest. So the higher the base deficit becomes, the more substantial the interest rate on those payments become, and the more out of control the train becomes as it rolls down the track. So this is definitely something that we need to pay attention to. You wouldn't manage your house like this, so why manage your country like this? And so the final point that we're going to touch on is, it says, compared with last year's projection, debt as a percentage of GDP is larger, but only modestly so through 2041, and then lower thereafter. Deficits are higher as a percentage of GDP through 2025 and lower thereafter. That change is largely driven by changes in revenues and net interest costs. Revenues are initially lower as a share of GDP, but ultimately are higher because individual income taxes are now projected to grow more quickly as a result of provisions of Public Law 1159-97, originally called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and called the 2017 Tax Act in this report. Now, two things I want to hit on here. One, the difference between debt and a deficit. So a deficit is when you manage your budget and you find out that you don't have enough money to pay all your bills. Whatever the difference is between the money you have and the bills you have, that's a deficit, and that's a yearly thing. Now, if you run deficits for too long, you begin to accumulate debt. Debt is the long-term money that you owe. Now, you can pay down debt. If you run surpluses in your economics over in your economy over a couple years, you can pay down your debt and eventually pay it off. In 1839, which was the last time we had a country that was completely debt free, Andrew Jackson paid off the national debt. We had no debt. We were a debt free nation, and we have not been a debt free nation ever since. So that's the difference. A deficit is a yearly budget type thing, running the deficit. Debt is the larger bills that you owe people from a backlog of deficits. So basically what this point is saying is that compared with the numbers that they put out last year, debt as a percentage of the GDP is higher, although not by much, through 2041, and then it's lower than their projections thereafter. And deficits are higher as a percentage of GDP through 2025 and then lower thereafter. And the change in deficits is largely driven by the fact that the individual tax rate is going to go back to its pre-tax 27, 2017 tax levels. So that's basically what that point is saying. Things are bad, but they're not quite as bad as we thought they would be. And a big chunk of that is because in 2026, the tax rate will return to its normal levels, to its previous levels, and government revenues will spike. But that just means things aren't as bad as we thought they would be. They're still pretty jacked up. And so now we move on to the part that most of us are concerned about. What does this mean? Why should I care? Well, what this means is that the nation is broke and getting broker. And that should concern all of us because we all live in this nation. Now, the benefit to that is that the majority of the money that the nation owes, it owes to its people. The bad part about that is that if the government does completely fall out, the people are really going to get hit hard for it because they're going to lose their investments. Now, I know for a lot of people that's not really that big of a deal, especially if you don't own any government-backed securities, any government securities, bonds, or whatever the case might be. But when you look at the long-term ramifications of how economies are tied together and of how the federal government foundationally, fundamentally supports the lifestyle that we all live here in America, a government that can't afford to pay its bills, that can't afford to provide basic services that we all look forward to every single day that we wake up, every single day that we turn on power and electricity is there, even though we feel like the healthcare system is trash, and it is, there is still a government, a fundamental federal government program that is subsidizing a substantial portion of that cost. When you look at public school systems, when you look at public facilities, public places and spaces, when you look at public services, mass transit, when you look at all of these welfare programs and other government aid programs, entitlement programs, when you look at all of the things that the government does for us, a government that can't afford to pay its bills becomes a problem, and especially so for Black people who are overly represented in terms of government employee service, in terms of being government employees, and in terms of being utilizing government aid programs. Now, we all know that there are more white people on government aid than Black people, but as purely a percentage of population, we as a percentage utilize government programs more than other people do. And that's understandable given our history, given our circumstances, given the social barriers that we face, the economic barriers that we face. I'm not trying to attack anybody or defend anybody. I'm just telling you what it is. So this is something we all should look forward to. And it should be an even bigger push to get us to really begin to look at how we can take better control, more control of the economic situations in our communities, as I did the show not too long ago on The Road to Zero that talked about how the Black community is rapidly approaching this place of zero net wealth. This report shows that a Black community in zero net wealth and a government that is, for the most part, broke and bankrupt, like, that's where we get to the point of no hope, the point of no return. And that's something that we should all be extremely concerned about. So definitely check out this report. Again, I don't want to give you all the answers. I don't want to give you my complete thoughts. I don't want to break it all the way down for you because I want you to do some of your own thinking, to do some of your own critical analysis, some of your own reviewing, and let me know what you think of the show. Let me know what you think of the report. Let me know what you think can be done. Go to the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Click on the Lessons for the Screen from the Screen tab. Scroll all the way down to Documents. You will see this show on the CBO Long-Term 2018 Report, and let me know what you think. This has been Lessons from the Screen. I appreciate you tuning in, and I will see you next week for another episode of Lessons.
Lessons from the screen. What we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Once again, I want to thank you for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PaxInc. through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes, Google Play Music, or Stitcher. Be sure to head to one of those places and leave us a review, and then be sure to head back to the website to let us know what you think about the show and communicate with us. Also, be sure to head to www.packsync.org and show some love and support for our sponsors. PackSync is doing big things in the community and trying to do more, always trying to do more. So be sure to head to the website. That's www.packsinc.org. Donate, volunteer, become a member, talk about it, whatever. They can use your support. And once again, they are doing great things in the community. As always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the Black community. The things that we look at, whether it be on the Trending Tuesday or the regular Lessons from the Screen show, will always be looked at from the Black perspective. So keep that in mind, because we need more minds shaped into that perspective and trying to do things that we need done for ourselves. So with that in mind, again, thank you guys for listening in. Remember to tune in to the Freedom Train Radio. We have the app that's available that you can get from the website. It's in the Google Play Store. Sorry, it's not available on iTunes yet. We have the live internet radio, and we have more shows coming up. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I will see you guys on Thursday for the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.